75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, here we are at the UFO Files, and things are falling from the sky, and snow is coming in, and very cold temperatures, and we're going to talk to Brian Vike in a minute, Larry Dickin. I believe he's expecting something around 30 below. Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe that. I wouldn't want to believe it. I won't want to experience it. I mean, you know, it was 70 degrees here the other day, and it's supposed to be back up in the 50s. We've had no winter, Jerry.
But you guys in Secaucus aren't completely safe. I mean, things are falling out of the sky near you.
Well, they are. In fact, there was a meteorite plowed through somebody's the roof of somebody's house about 25 miles south of me here in New Jersey. And it was not just a stone, or what they call a stony meteorite. It was a metallic meteorite, a lot of iron content in it. It had a very strange golden color to it, which I found unusual.
When it has a lot of iron in it, it's orange or gold or red, right?
Right.
I remember all of this. It's coming back to him, basic sure. Science.
Now, you know what?
Jane Swartley, our producer up in Boulder, something got close to her, too, but that wasn't a meteorite.
Yeah, that was a Russian rocket booster, which they believe crashed, a piece of it at least, crashed in Wyoming, which isn't that far away from Denver, the Denver area.
Well, Brian Vike's back up. His website's working. Why don't we get him on the line here and welcome him back to Ufology?
Certainly. Let's do that.
I think Brian's on the line now. Brian, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, guys, for having me. I'm really, really good to be back. Been a while, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Yeah, you said you'd be gone for a little while, and you were.
Yeah, I was supposed to be gone for good. I don't know, things changed pretty quick, you know. I had some really good offers, and not only that, you know, I was getting a little bored, and to be honest, I really do enjoy this stuff, you know. But I think what I needed was a good rest, you know. I needed to get away with it. Actually, before I shut the site down, I posted a little note because someone was searching and they found a cache, and my last thing on there was saying, I won't be back till after Christmas or into the new year or whatever it was. I need a break, sort of thing, you know.
Right.
And that's what I did. I really needed it, Bobby. I really did.
Well, you sound good now.
Yep.
So the rest did you well.
Jerry, let me ask Brian to tell us what happened in his house there. I thought this was really funny because it was right out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You know, where the lead character, you know, had all these UFO pictures and the Star Trek spaceship hanging from a string and everything, and little ETs, and Brian said, well, he had sort of a similar setup. What happened, Brian?
Well, it was on October 20th. I finished the radio show, and I got off, and I went, and I wasn't feeling pretty good. My back was really sore. I went and my wife and I sat up till 3 hours in the morning. So this just wasn't a snap to shift, so let's shut her down, you know. We sat discussed it for a while. I said, I gotta go. So come in, knocked the site down, deleted my email account, phoned up to tell us my phone provider, told to change my phone number, even though all this is costing me money. But anyways, I sat down, I looked at, oh, you should have seen this stuff in here, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, I didn't have it all in here, but this is, you know, just a small area, and I had boxes and other things in my other room. Like, I got a big setup in there of, like, DVDs, videos, documentaries, all the reports, cases, magazines, books, you wouldn't believe it. It's just absolutely incredible. I grabbed it all, pulled in some boxes for the liquor store, filled them all up, taped them up, put them in the other room, backed away. I've had enough of this. But, you know, but it was But it's all packed away. It's still there, but I do have some DVDs, CDs rather, I was looking for because I had some information I wanted. So much for that. It's packed up, so I said forget about it.
Well, now you and Larry, Brian, have been talking off the air, and Larry says that he thinks you've got a lot of things going on here, and you might want to talk about some of them. I guess your website's back up, and you're busy re-entering all of the reports and all of the things you've had, because you had a great collection.
Yeah, actually, I had, when I shut her down, I actually had, it was 5,200 and some odd reports. Most of them were reports. There were some articles, like Dennis Velisser, I believe it's pronounced, his last name. Sorry, Dennis, if I got it wrong. Had some of his things on here, and some other things people sent. John, a good friend of mine, John at UFO Info, is posting his material too, but there was a good collection. So right now, there's only 900 and some odd reports on the site of my own. What I'm doing, I sort of slowed down right now posting anything because there's a really kind gentleman here who lives down in Nanaimo in British Columbia, and he has actually gotten the site now, and he's, you know, going through it, and he's trying to grab all the stuff, all the old stuff, all the material, so he can put it back into this new system, that is the 7.9 new system, and we'll have it up and running. And then all I have to do is add the stuff that's sort of missing, which would be the 2006, maybe a few 2005 reports, but other than that, it should be rolling good. So I'm sort of just hesitant of putting too much on, but I want to keep something going, so I've been just adding some video or audio clips of some of the interviews that I've done with folks. So it's going over pretty good. Lots of people coming.
It's good. It's good.
Jerry?
Yes.
You know, since we have Brian on the phone here, and we've had a sighting that's getting a lot of national and international attention here, I thought I'd bring him into the discussion of it, and that's the Chicago airport sighting. And I'd just like to read a statement of my opinion to the audience on the import of this sighting.
Okay, you go ahead and do that then, Brian, and I'll take you on.
Right, right.
Thanks, guys.
So here it goes. This is as they say on the email forums, in my humble opinion, and this is my opinion, and then we'll discuss it. This sighting, although admittedly important as a landmark event rather than a quality event for many reasons, is being blown out of proportion relative to many other excellent reports that Peter Davenport and many other researchers and archivers have on file. I totally disagree with the reasoning that lies behind the itemization of witness, quote, credibility and mainstream media attention that was presented by an article cited from an individual who wrote for, what's the name of that site? American Chronicle, right? And so I had read the article, and I responded in with my opinion. I think we're a little not quite on base with what is really important about this sighting. And the real deal here is not really credible, as opposed to, for the record, unqualified, uncertified, or undegreed ordinary citizens with good common sense and observational skills, of which there are billions around the world. Nor is the attention of the, as usual, debunking attitude of the media. One, of course, must give credit to at least two members of the media from the Chicago Tribune and also from CNN Headline News, who could possibly be risking their careers in treating this report as something worthy of old-fashioned investigative journalism and respectful story presentation. And I might add, you know, a lot of people don't remember the initial CNN report on CNN Headline News, which is on a different channel, cable channel, than the regular CNN network. and they have their own staffing and everything. And this one guy, you know, picked up this AP story, and he seriously presented it. Now, they didn't give him much of an opportunity to pursue it, because it ended up on Cooper Anderson's program.
Anderson Cooper.
Excuse me.
that's
or, you know, at any rate, it ended up there and didn't get quite such good treatment, but we can talk about that later. At any rate, certainly the Chicago Tribune reporter did an outstanding job and is continuing to do so. We can be assured that the vast majority of the mainstream media is either ignoring this case or will continue to present it as the crazy people seeing identifiable objects or presenting moving blobs of light video stories. Kudos go to AP for making the Chicago Tribune story available to the media worldwide. Some media sites and some TV news programs give at least the official FAA and United Airlines version of the story. I really love that lenticular cloud explanation that was offered in the initial story. But the main point here is that a member of the media is doing what he is doing with this story. Politics has entered the picture, and both government, the FAA, and corporate United Airlines cover-ups are being exposed at the outset of the investigation. In this case, a new aspect of UFO report research is being emphasized, and rightfully so, by the reporter from the Chicago Tribune, who attempted to obtain information from the FAA via Freedom of Information request about its official knowledge and that of its employees. The FAA and management of United Airlines have been denying any knowledge of the sighting. Subsequently, they did admit to some phone calls and people reporting the thing, but they still deny that there's any importance to the matter. And I read one report from somebody that emphasized the fact that, well, people, the FAA and United should be concerned, because if there's UFOs that low over airports, that's not exactly safe flying conditions, if nothing else.
Well, I think it's a reason the airlines are reluctant to ever mention it.
Right. One of the reasons.
What would be another reason?
They just, following the official government line, the UFOs don't exist. Other than the political and limited supportive media member aspects of this UFO sighting, it is just another hearsay case, which may be eventually supported by one or more camera photos. Of course, we can expect any photos and videos along with those providing them to be skewered as being hoaxes by the debunking crowd from their armchairs. I find it strange that no other public witnesses in the area of O'Hare Airport and surrounding residential areas have come forth with reports. You'd think there'd be the traffic stopped on the freeways, people out on their lawns, taking pictures, pointing, talking to each other. That's what happened here in New Jersey back in 2001, down in the Carteret area. I mean, thousands of people stopped on the Jersey Turnpike to look at whatever was going on in the sky. This didn't happen here at the airport. Only these half a dozen to a dozen airline employees seem to have seen anything. So if I'm wrong about that, if there is a witness out there that lived in the area of O'Hare or who happened to be driving by on the freeway and saw this object, please get in touch with us here at the Jerry Pippin Show.
Yeah, now, Brian, before you comment on it, I just want to say one thing, and this is collateral information. My sister, who certainly knows about UFOs, because she's a good little sister and listens to her brother on the radio.
Yeah.
But really not, and Marlene, forgive me, but she's not a sophisticated UFO person, you know. In other words, it's casual interest. And she's really, this story really got her excited. This story got her talking.
Mm-hmm.
It was on CNN as late as yesterday again. The Tribune had an article this morning in the paper again.
Right.
So it's not all hellfire and brimstone to the media. They need to be congratulated a little bit.
Yeah, what I've seen, even what Larry and I were talking there today, when I got mentioned to him, I know, like, just personally speaking for myself, even with, you know, newspapers and TV and so forth, it's usually the small-town newspapers. They seem to pick something up, or as a matter of fact, let's put it this way. If I get a good sighting, not just lights or something, if I get something with some meat to it, I'll write to them. And not every time they'll put something in the paper, but I bet you about 80% of the time they will write something up. Small, sometimes you get on the phone to an interview, and they'll put it in. The larger media, especially in Canada and, of course, the United States, they're more reluctant to, you know, put something in. Unless there is this multiple magnitude of people that have seen it where it makes some big news. In this case, there was a number of people. And I think what the attraction is, it's over an airport, and I think this is what's really grabbed the attention. Why was it there? It shouldn't have been there. It should have been over an airport. What's it doing there, you know? So I think this is what it is. Maybe it's the people, like a lot of people sort of look at pilots, professionals, police officers, and so forth, as being more credible witnesses, which, as far as I'm concerned, they maybe have some experience in some of their backgrounds, you know, to whatever. But I think anybody is a credible witness. Anybody. I mean, I've got a little girl here. I think she was seven, 8 years old. She gave me the best description of what she saw. Her parents saw it also, but she happened to spot it first. She gave me the greatest description on audio with her parents' permission. She joined us on a show and so forth. And they got video of it. Excellent witness. So, you know, you don't need sometimes police officers, pilots, and so forth. There's a lot of other people just like myself. I'm just a regular guy. See something, give a good description of what's going on.
Well, I agree with that, both of you on that. I just think people use the term credible because police officers or military or pilots, when they do report this, they supposedly are able to report something, and we know that's not necessarily true, but if you were a lawyer in front of a jury and you had a choice of bringing in a police officer or a pilot saying you saw something, or a man off the street, guess who you'd bring in? You'd bring in the pilot or the police officer. I mean, that's just human nature, and we can't beat that, in my opinion. But the big question, in my opinion, and I want to ask both of you, maybe you guys don't think it's such a big deal, but the big deal, I think, is that no one else saw this thing.
As I said.
Except the airline employees and the people on the ramp. Now, what does that mean? Are we saying the people on the ramp and the airline pilots were bored and made up a story?
Well, here's my take on that, and this is just a take on it because I don't know either way. My take is, and I'm just going from what I've received, reports where I've received, say, where there were multiple witnesses or should have been, there should have been more to this event, but I never received reports, only from a certain number. There's a lot of people, I think, who are actually witnessing these things. Not all the time, of course, you have individuals, two people, but when you start getting more than two or three, four, five, six people, I said there has to be more people who have seen it. I really believe that. There has to be. But why are they not coming forward? Is it reluctant to open their mouth? Because we still do have, and I even hate the word, that ridicule factor. I really don't like the word, but I'm going to use it anyway. But, you know, is it that they just don't want to get involved and have their name out just in case somebody thinks they're a nut? You know, they definitely don't want to speak to the media, and some people are reluctant to report. Now, I know that I get a lot of reports going back a number of years, and the guy says, I want to finally tell you this report. And he seems very credible, sincere of what he's telling me, and it seems to match up with a lot of the reports that I've got where they've had multiple witnesses. And you still have people coming forward, and I know I've had that from, you know, numerous cases where eventually people will say, well, I read it, I thought I'd better report it, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really hard to say, you know. Maybe some of the people inside weren't it, didn't have the actual view of this object. It's really hard to say because I wasn't there, and, you know, I'm just...
Yeah, I understand. And people are reluctant to get involved.
I just want to, you know, I certainly made the statement during my commentary there that, to me, that was the standout aspect of this sighting was the fact that only a certain small number of airline employees saw this object.
So what does that mean to you?
And no one else in the area seemed to. And I said, well, this is very strange because this is just the opposite of things like the Phoenix Lights, the Carteret event here in New Jersey, where thousands and thousands of people, you know, from west of Newark all the way to Staten Island, New York, and across the bay into Manhattan, saw something very strange in the sky, something huge. And there were thousands of people reporting. Everybody wanted to be on the news. I mean, no one was shy. Whereas in this case, are Chicagoans different from New Yorkers? I don't think so. And I'm not saying that these people didn't see it. I think it's just a very strange phenomena in that other people did not see it.
So in other words, you don't have an underlying reason for saying that other than...
It's unexplainable.
I mean, you're not insinuating...
Oh, absolutely not. I'm not insinuating that these airline employees got together and created a fantasy here. Far from it. I believe that they saw something. I just find that it's one of those strange aspects that I've seen before in UFO reports where people, a group of people even, can see something and the rest of the world isn't aware of it. And I've seen that happen before. So I think that's just what's going on here.
Brian, do you ever run across that where you have multiple witnesses? Some say they saw it and others say, well, I didn't see anything.
You bet you. Oh, you bet you. Oh, yes, I've had that happen quite a few times, actually. Actually, back east in Quebec in 2006, there was a string of reports. I don't know how many I got, but I got a lot of them. There was a lot of the people who stood around the area after these reports came in, and people would say, search around because they read a newspaper article, these lights in Quebec, and they're on the HBCC UFO research website, so they went and had a look, and they're reading these reports. We never seen them. They were down there at that time. We never saw them.
Right.
So, you know, you got to think, oh, God, what have we got going here? But there were so many different people, you know, from that surrounding whole entire area.
Well, now, we've had lots of reports from O'Hare in the Chicago area. In fact, one list I think I saw last year said that was the number one place of sightings.
It was. Chicago was number one. The Chicago area was the number one place in the United States in 2005 for sightings.
Well, Brian, now where you are in British Columbia, you have a fair amount of sightings, and that's not a hugely populated area.
No, well, up here, to be honest with you, 2004, 2005, and 2006 now has been very, very dead. I mean, it's slow. And mind you, I used to do a regular radio show. It was only maybe a 2-3 minute deal here every once a week. And it was on the terrace. And anyways, you know, I'm sure that helped because I went through all the whole entire area from, you know, terrace right to Planet Mass to Prince Rupert and so forth, and right down all through our area about far as Burns Lake. So I was getting some good coverage. Even for a little short spot, so people would say, oh, we can know the guy, hey, this guy reported, you know, looking into this stuff, we'll give him a call. And I think that helps. Newspapers ran a lot of articles, but before actually all that took place, naturally, because it had to get the media's attention first, was there were some big, big stuff happening. And I think it was in 2000, they actually did, as a small NTV news here, they actually did a small thing on the news. I mean, they came down with a film crew, and I stood around like an idiot, you know, with my books and stuff. And then I said, an idiot with my apron. My wife made me an alien apron. So I'm standing here, and of course, it was just something funny.
Mm-hmm.
That aired, but that was like in, 2000? And in bang, 2002, 2003, it didn't stop. It was nonstop with big stuff. Now, I don't know what the attraction was, and then that's when all the media jumped on.
Right.
the wind stuff started happening. So, you know, it was actually prior. The people were phoning, people were emailing me. I was running out interviewing with all these people, running to Terrace and Smithers and Quick, and, you know, all around. It was incredible.
Yeah.
It does seem to happen that way, doesn't
yeah,
it?
And yeah, and lady died. But you know, I'll tell you one thing. Now, I don't have any proof, fact, or nothing. But I talked to a gentleman who, he was in the military and just recently got out. This is going back last year, I think, was early last year. And he told me a little story here about as well. You know, Area 51 has allegedly all this stuff, right? Where they do testing even and so forth. He said that because of the public eye on some of the stuff that they were testing, you know, there were so many people watching for, hey, we're looking for some weird aircraft. Well, they moved parts of this around to different parts of the United States, different bases and that. And he said, in your area, he says, it was early 2002 when they moved some stuff into Washington State. Now, if that's a true statement that he made, if it was actually in fact, then is that a possibility or that is the reason for why all the sightings here, because it would be a straight run up here in a remote area. It's a possibility. It's something I have to think of, you know.
Yeah, something to consider.
Jerry?
Yeah.
You know, I certainly want to give Brian some time here. He's got a couple of sightings. Now, this isn't 2006, and Brian and I talked about this. It's 2006, there really wasn't much, you know, super sightings going on. So the Chicago thing sort of wrapped up the year and gave somebody a hook to hang their hat on that at least something of important happened this year, although there are many other reports out there that are equally interesting. Brian's got some things that we discussed last night, one of them over in Eastern Canada, which make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Oh, good. That's the kind of report.
So I'd like for Brian to get into that.
And I'd like for Brian to go investigate them.
So, Brian, could you tell us about that?
Okay, that took place in Berlica, Massachusetts. Now, if I think I got the right pronunciation, hopefully, anyways. Now, actually, this whole event took place on December 12, 2004. Now, it was reported to MUFON. And a gentleman, just bear with me, a gentleman by the name of Mark Petty, MUFON, I guess representative anyways, had gone out and probably some other members, I'm not too sure, had gone out and spoke to these folks, and they did it, did their investigation and, you know, continued, did a lot of work on it, so forth. And anyways, but that's back in 2004 and onward from the sighting. And anyways, these folks got a hold of me, Robert and Nance, their name, and can use their name without any problems. They gave me permission to do that. Anyways, they came forward and they sent this report to me. And of course, the media got a hold of it too once they seen the post. And of course, they got a hold of it and it was the newspaper ran a story. And then I guess the MUFON fellas weren't too happy that they were going to talk about it because the investigation was still continuing, eh? But hey, that's the way it goes. But anyway, like I said, this is absolutely fascinating. Here we got a couple, like I said, on the 12-12-2004. So we got it in December. I guess it was a pretty nice night, whatnot. Anyways, here's Robert. He's in the kitchen preparing dinner for Ann, and she was doing some crossword puzzles on the kitchen table. And they had just got home, so the glass, sliding glass door, well, they usually have some curtains and some drapes, and, you know, they pull them shut. But anyways, they were still open. So anyways, as they're doing their business, going about their business, they all of a sudden, out of the corner of their eye, they see this huge ball of brilliant white light or bright white light coming, you know, sort of shining in into the home through this patio glass doors and sitting roughly around treetop level. Now, they said this thing was absolutely enormous, maybe 2 to 3 football fields in size. Now, you know, when you see something like that, you kind of thought, okay, what's going on here, you know? But anyways, as they went to the window, of course, and they're watching this little thing here, this huge thing, and it was sat there and hovering, and it was absolutely not a sound whatsoever. Anyways, Anne, she opens up the patio door, steps out onto the patio, and Robert's still inside, and he's watching this thing. Now, out of this great big white ball of light, which is huge, here comes a blue light that actually came down to the deck, transformed into this perfectly square object, this light, which engulfed Anne, the lady. And all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden she's sort of in that, and it started to lift her off the deck and take her towards this big ball of light. Now, this is happening, I mean, it's happening at a slow pace. Anyways, Robert stuck his arm out and wrapped it around her, and he caught her by, I guess, on his, through his wrist, her arm, anyway, and dragged her back in, and they both basically hit the floor, because, you know, up the just to pull her in so hard to get her sort of away from this. She was unconscious after this. She doesn't remember a darn thing. Matter of fact, her sister, they were talking to her sister later, and she reported, without Robert and Nan saying anything, she saw this great big ball of white light with something trailing behind it. But it was an absolute incredible case. You know, there was something else really important here. I do have a picture of this, of Robert's hand, and it actually does have burn marks on it. There was also something really, really interesting, too, was after the event was sort of over and whatnot, you know, after he pulled her back in, and he gets her up on the, off the floor and onto the couch, and, she comes to, and what's going on? All of a sudden, he noticed this. He said, like a white styrofoam or like a snow blowing in this open door, the open patio door. And, of course, eventually just disappeared or dissipated. And it wasn't like snow, or because it was, I thought, maybe December, but it wasn't snow. He said there was no dampness or nothing. It was just totally, totally bizarre. And his hand was definitely blistered from heat, radiation, no matter what. And he did seek medical attention after that, too. And, they couldn't figure it out.
Wow.
Very bizarre.
Wow. I wonder if they've had any more visits since then. Who knows?
Not really. I don't think so. I don't think they've really had I think they've had some weird things happen in the home. Microwaves going off and some of the appliances and stuff they're talking about. But this year, absolutely. I'm not kidding you. If the actual interview is, you know, when they actually get into it, it's really amazing. It really is something else when you hear it. And I mean, they just rattle us off like some genius guy sitting here and he knows what he's talking about and just goes at it. I mean, there's not a skip and beat here. They really are incredible people. I really do believe something did happen to them. No question. No matter what, I don't know, but definitely it was something weird.
Jerry, we're going to have a link to Brian's site where people can go and read this report and also listen to the audio recording so you can hear from the people themselves. Right, Brian?
Yep, most definitely.
Yeah, this is them talking to you on the phone about it?
Yep. It's about 15 minutes or an hour. I'm not sure. There was one there an hour, 8 minutes, and the other one was 50, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, or you can, guys, if you want, you post it to your site. It doesn't matter. I'm easy.
Well, now, what about this other sighting?
Well, there was another one here. There's been some really dandies, let me tell you, really dandies. I'll just try to rattle through it, you know, quickly give you an idea. Well, there's the one I don't know if I ever spoke about that one to you fellas or not, out of Peterborough, Ontario. There's a fella, I had him on a radio show, and also there's an interview with that, so I don't know if you got it on your site or not, but he and his, I believe it was his cousin, they were out, this is going back to 2004 again, too. They were outside. It was early in the morning. Actually, the night before, they actually were watching some meteor streak across the sky, which I thought was quite interesting, but a little bit different because they were seen to be quite low. Anyway, the next night, they were out doing their business. I mean, we're not talking about kids here. We're talking about an older gentleman and his cousin. They're outside and doing their thing, and here they notice this streak coming across the sky. And, went sort of from, say, the front of their home to the back of the home as they're standing out in the street. So they thought it was cool, and they lost sight of it because of the homes. Anyways, all of a sudden, for some reason, here it is. They seen this girl. She started up running down the sidewalk, like, in other words, past them, and she was just flying. Now, I believe she hid behind a car, and they're saying, what the heck, maybe looking for somebody. All of a sudden, they got this weird sensation. Here, they turns around, and over top of his house comes a huge triangular-shaped craft. This thing was, we're talking just above the home. That's how low it was, so it would have made it, say, above the telephone poles and any, say, a little bit of a high structure. But this thing just slowly came over top of the roofs, made a slight sort of turn, and right over top of the GE factory. Now, the interesting thing, and eventually disappeared. Well, the next day, of course, he got up, and he walked out, and he couldn't, some of the people, getting ready for work, so some of the people were out there with their hoods up and everything else. A bunch of the vehicles on the road all had these electrical problems. They couldn't get them going. He had to take his vehicle in, and get it to the garage where they replaced, I think, $400-some-odd worth of electrical parts because they're all fried.
Uh-huh.
Very bizarre case.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another good one, and that's on audio, too. I think one of the other good ones, too, was the one from the airline, ex-airline pilot. Actually, that took place, where the heck did that one go? Brunsdeck, your guy. Here we go. And that was in Brazil. And that was another one. And, I mean, there was an airline pilot with him. There was his wife, or his girlfriend at the time, was a stewardess, I believe. There's some other pilot. He was sleeping in back. They were being chauffeured back from a simulation thing they were going through. And I think it was really early in the morning. All of a sudden, he's seen this big ball of light, which eventually, to make this long story short, eventually ended up just off to the side of the road on a busy highway. And he got out and watched this thing. He could feel, he says, it felt like really weird. His teeth were going, not changing or nothing, but this really weird taste and everything, feeling. I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, another bizarre thing. And it was like a flying saucer dome with a dome-shaped thing on top. And that's the interview with audio interview. It's about an hour and 8 minutes long, and you guys got that, too. So if you guys want to put them up, fly at it. Some good stuff.
Yeah, it certainly is. We could talk to you for hours, Brian, but we got to do a couple of sightings before we get off of our own, because that's, in addition to that, you got to do another radio show with Smith tonight, so we better let you go.
Okay, my friends. Hey, it's always a pleasure to be with you both, and really enjoy it, and anytime, I'm always thinking about it.
Oh, we're glad to see you back, my man.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Oh, by the way, I don't have horses.
No horses.
Okay, fellas. You have a good one, and thanks again for having me on.
Okay.
Yeah, and keep the heat turned up there so that you don't get frozen.
Well, I won't be going outside to get tight as that. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot, eh?
Okay, Brian Vike.
Good night, Brian.
Good night.
And on the line from Houston, British Columbia. And it's a little different weather than Houston, Texas.
Quite a bit, isn't it, Jerry?
You know, Larry Dickin, we're talking about winter. There was another sighting that George has on his sightings report that we refer to each week.
Right.
In which another airport sighting. We were talking about O'Hare.
Yes,
we were talking about winter. And it was snowing in Colorado, which it has been doing pretty regularly.
They've had three storms already, three blizzards out there, and one before Christmas, and which is the one that this sighting relates to.
Yeah, and that's in Colorado Springs, right?
Right.
The airport there? I guess the commercial airport, not the the Air Force.
Yeah, the commercial airport. Mm-hmm. And so we might as well get into that, because we've been talking about airports and the fact that perhaps Chicago is not the only airport which UFOs are hovering around these days.
Well, didn't George Filer mention several airports?
He alluded to the fact that, you know, that there had been sightings around the Cleveland Airport, Columbus, Georgia, besides Colorado Springs and Chicago. Now, I didn't see any other written reports in this week's report from those other locations other than Chicago. But let's put it this way. Airports have always, interestingly enough, been a target for UFOs that seem to be hovering and observing. So the Chicago event is not a standalone and unique event.
And they're not always commercial airports. A lot of things happen to military bases.
Military as well.
Big
yeah.
deal in Iran. Remember that? The airport, the Iranian Air Force?
Right.
Power.
Back in the good old days of the Shah.
So tell us what happened in Colorado Springs. Now, you know, a lot of people think of UFOs and good weather, but we've had lots of reports of UFOs and bad weather, especially There were a couple of reports last year, remember, over on Long Island during snowstorms?
There certainly were, and interestingly enough, a very large objects, giant. One was a giant disc and the other was a giant triangle, and both were sighted during snowstorms last winter. And those reports we had on our show.
Well, definitely, UFOs are all weather craft. And remember last show we did, we had the story down in Jamaica of the UFOs looking at the tourist. And that certainly wasn't right. A snowstorm. That was.
Except it was Bermuda.
Oh, was it? Oh, it was close. I can't tell one of those islands from the other. Even the
right.
Music sounds like. And the drinks all taste the same.
Well, it's only when you drink that you get to see these things on those islands. But
what happened to Colorado Springs?
All right, to get back on topic here.
Get away.
And we do have this story has a picture accompanying it, which we will you will see adjacent to the program player. And very interesting picture because this was taken by the Observer. And you can see that they're on a freeway, and you can actually see a snowplow up in front of them. And this is just as this big snowstorm was starting. In other words, you don't see like big snow drifts and things like that. People are still out on the roads trying to get home or wherever. And in this photograph, you'll notice a dark object, and it almost looks like two objects together. One potentially could be a disc-shaped object, with a little hump on the top or dome. The other one is very much less visible. It's just a blob. And it isn't nearly as distinct as the other. And you got to remember also, this is during a snowstorm. So the visibility is less than a mile anyway. So that would put this object at less than a mile away because it is still visible, just as visible as some of the cars on the freeway. So with that, let me state the sighting itself, the report. The witness states, I was driving in blizzard conditions on December the 20th, 2006 at 8 a.m. and took this digital picture to show how bad it was. I noticed later an object in the picture that was not visible to me at the time. And why? Because his eyesight is focusing on what he wanted to get a picture of, which is the freeway and the snowplow and how the visibility was so low. He wasn't looking up in the sky, even though the sky was in the frame. And that's the reason he didn't notice it while he was taking the picture. And this often happens. So he uploads the picture to his computer, and lo and behold, up at the top left of the picture, there's this object, or perhaps two distinct objects. He says winds were strong and were blowing straight at my truck. The object is under a street light, but looks much more distant. And looking at it myself here, I would have the same opinion, that it is far, far away from the streetlight itself. It is not a spot on my windshield. I just snapped digital picture to capture driving conditions and did not notice the object until later. The airport and all air traffic was shut down. So he's driving on a freeway that is adjacent to the Colorado Springs Airport. The winds were at 35 to 45 miles an hour. I was taking a picture of the truck ahead of me, and there were three trucks with trailers. Due to the conditions, we were driving at 15 to 20 miles per hour. The road we are driving on is parallel to the airport, which is 2 miles south of our position. Investigator's notes. So this report was handed over to an investigator. Says here that his name is Will Puckett of UFOs Northwest. Took this report and investigated it. And there's a website listing for this, and I guess there's details there. But here is a short set of notes from him. I originally thought that the object in the photo was a light airplane or a helicopter. However, the witness stated that the Colorado Springs airport was closed down because of the storm. Most other airports in Colorado on the Front Range and the Rockies were also closed due to the severe weather that day. It is doubtful that any aircraft would be flying under severe weather conditions. Now, this is blizzard conditions. Anytime you have winds over 39 miles per hour sustained and visibility below a quarter of a mile, you have a blizzard. It is doubtful that there'd be any aircraft flying under these conditions. Therefore, this makes it quite unlikely that this object was either a helicopter or an airplane. Another possible explanation is that the object could be a spot on the windshield. The photographer denies that he had anything on his windshield. Given the conditions with the high wind, and I've personally experienced that here in Secaucus, I've taken pictures of blizzards that happened here over the years. When you look at the image after you've uploaded it, you don't see snowflakes. You just see a haze. And that's exactly what you see here. And, certainly a snowflake could land on your windshield, but under these conditions, it wouldn't be sitting there very long. So it's very unlikely that this was a spot on the windshield or a snowflake or whatever.
Well, we have a little less than 15 minutes left for our sighting show. Do you have any warmer places where we saw UFOs?
Well, I wouldn't guarantee that, but we always do a Rick's pick, so we want to get that in.
Yeah, Rick had quite a windstorm in Seattle, blew down one of his trees, and they've had really rough weather up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's been one of those El Nino winters. Is that when you have El Nino conditions, storms blow into the Pacific Northwest, and they're extremely powerful. They even get hurricane force winds there, not in Seattle itself, because you're protected by a peninsula there that is west of Seattle. Out on that peninsula itself, on the ocean directly, they've had wind gusts of 90 miles an hour in some of these storms. So Rick had quite an experience. Maybe we'll take one of those photos and put it up next to his Rick's pick here.
Yeah, well, that might not be a bad idea. You know, Rick. Rick went to an abduction meeting.
Right.
Not where you go get abducted. The meeting of abductees. Talking about
right.
It. And he had some interesting things to say about that. But what is his pick this year or this week? What was the first one for this year? Is what I was trying to say.
Okay,
I'm still thinking about all that blizzard weather and It's hard for me to talk. I'm shaking.
Yeah, you got the door open again.
No, it's going to be cold here in Oklahoma tonight, down around 30.
Well, that's cold for Oklahoma, I guess, yeah.
Just because it was 70 today doesn't mean...
Well, here's Rick and his pick. We have a dark blue UFO. They do come in all colors, incidentally.
Just like M&M's.
Right. Hovers 200 feet in the air for 45 minutes. Now, that's a significant thing about this sighting, is that it had a very long duration. You know, many of these sightings is people see objects and they see them only for a few seconds or maybe a minute. But occasionally you get the sighting where it's a very long duration, and this is one of them. This occurred back in, you know, Rick likes to dig up these oldies but goodies. This one occurred back in June of 1975. And it was not reported to presumably Peter Davenport in this case, but I don't know for sure, but it was not reported until August the 4th, 2002. And for some strange reason, it didn't get posted on the website until March the 21st, 2003. Strange, isn't it?
Well, Peter was busy.
It must have been. Must have been a busy time. Right. So many sightings, couldn't keep up with them. At any rate, here is the report. This sighting happened maybe two...
Not that that's ever happened to us.
No. Never happens to us.
We're right on top of everything.
Right. And very timely.
Tell that to a couple of people who were complaining about we kind of took off in December as far as doing reports.
Right.
Well, we're like Brian. We needed a break.
Indeed, we did.
I just don't remember the break.
I mean, you know, we can't work, 24/7 here. Our programming's available 24/7. People should be thankful for that. And it is free.
And we do put in our share of hours.
Right. Quite a few hours between the two of us, and of course all of our staff as well.
Well, we're all working pretty hard these days.
Right.
And let's get to Rick's pick. It happened in 75. Right.
Let me try again. Yes. This sighting happened maybe 2 weeks after a well-publicized sighting occurred in the Grand Island area. Now, this report comes...
Is it Grand Island, Nebraska?
No. Actually, Grand Island, New York.
Okay.
The location of the sighting specifically was in the town of Kenmore, New York. Okay.
I like the washing machines.
At any rate, there were a lot of sightings in the greater Buffalo area in 1975, which tells you where you're at in the state of New York. You're up around Buffalo. I was up on the second floor of my home on Keller Avenue watching TV. I saw some lights flashing outside my window. I opened it up, and far off towards where Kenmore Avenue and Wilbur Street intersect, I saw a jello mold shaped craft hovering in the air. Now, you know what jello mold is?
Yeah, it's got little ridges.
Little ripples, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like an upside down bowler hat.
Right.
It's
got ripples.
Got ridges in it.
Right.
I'm whiz in the kitchen.
Right. Now, you know, it's like we've said often before, UFOs come in all sizes and shapes. I mean, it's not like there's one standard model called the flying disc. No, there are many, many different shapes for UFOs.
Well, then, I think that's because they come from different places.
Different places?
And perhaps different times.
Yeah, different times, different places, different everything. And even in one species, do you think they only have one model? Of course not. They're like us. Look at all the different car models and plane models we have. So they're going to have the same thing. At any rate, I ran to get my telescope. I set it up with the tripod and took a look at the object. It was just sitting there in one spot of the sky. So I then called my mother on the telephone. She had recently remarried and lived right across from where the object was hovering, wasn't she fortunate, at about 200 feet in the air. She went to the second floor of her home, which is in the back of her house. We looked at it both together and talked about it on the phone. It was there for 45 minutes at least.
I'd like to have that recording.
All right. The Keller...
That was before the NSA, so... Probably not available.
Not available. No longer available.
Right.
The color of the craft was dark blue. It had a large pedestal section on the bottom with large panels all the way around it. On each panel was a round light which had a thick, milky glass-looking appearance, which did not seem very high-tech at all. Well, actually, it is pretty high-tech, but we won't get into that. At any rate, let me proceed here. Each panel had a different color. The lights behind the panels seemed to come from way deep inside this thing. They would be dim at first, then get brighter as time progressed, until it looked so hot or bright. In other words, he's interpreting bright as being hot, that it seemed it should melt. On the top, there was a main building section, which was round, like a pail turned upside down. Around that were smaller, boxy-looking forms, odd shapes, not completely box-like. The whole craft was a flat gunmetal blue. I zoomed in on one of the lights with the telescope to look for welds or screws or anything that would give me a clue as to how it was constructed, but there were no marks or indications of use of tools of any kind. It was at that point that I realized that this thing was not moving at all. You know, I think I would have noticed that a little sooner, but, you know, he said it's just absolutely stationary, had not moved at all. I was at 120 power on the telescope, and the light filled the glass of my scope's eyepiece. The craft just didn't move. It was rock solid, frozen in the sky. Then, all at once, it turned off all of its lights, and it seemed to shift to the left. I noticed that when the lights went off, the craft seemed to fade or get fuzzy, like an old TV when the picture gets grainy and fuzzy. It very quickly faded and shifted at the same time, and my mother said that it zipped away. From my point of view, I think it just slipped into another time zone, and the fading was sort of a vortex. Well, in a sense, you know, speaking of portals and current concepts that people have about space-time portals, I think he's about on the mark there. Then suddenly, I guess this, you're going to like this part, Jerry. Then suddenly, the United States Air Force showed up. Da-da-da-da.
In the Wild Blue Yonder. Got to play that.
Right.
Okay.
The second it was gone, the object, three or four jets appeared, zipping all over the neighborhood.
Well, I've waited for 45 minutes for the Air Force to catch on.
It took them long enough, didn't it, back in those days. Here's three or four jets zipping all over the neighborhood in the Kenmore, New York area, obviously looking for this UFO.
Well, to be fair to the Air Force, it's hard to get those officers out of the officers' club and into the cockpits very fast, you know?
Right. And besides that, they wanted to get back to the cocktails, too.
Right.
Because it says here, they did not stay very long, as I recall.
Right. They were having a party, and how dare somebody interrupt them for national security?
Right.
Now the Air Force is really PO'd at me, and I guess, do we have a closing comment? Because we're out of time, thank goodness. I'm digging a hole.
Well, it just says, of course, this was 1975, and my mother to this day says it was a round military plane being tested. So she was with the government even back then. It was, no UFOs, it's all secret government projects.
Maybe that's the reason she had a second husband.
I guess so.
He believed otherwise. I don't know, folks. It's good to be back on a regular schedule. We're going to be back next week. You don't believe us? Time us.
Right.
Oh, watch out for those flying saucers.
Okay, Jerry. Keep your eyes to the skies.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm a spaceman, and I just got in from space, a spaceman. I'm looking for the human race, a spaceman. I heard a whisper, it was here, I'm a spaceman.